Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, July 5th, 2003. Today's session is Communication and Parenting, presented by Peter Schmidt. Let's listen in.
I'm a pastor in Fargo, North Dakota, West Fargo. This is a workshop or a session on communication, especially as it relates to parenting, but actually once we learn some basic rules of how communication happens, it is applicable at every part of our life, and it's so important. And if you have heard this material before, that's great. I have taught it 100 times, and I keep needing to review it and think it through, because it's a different model than the one that I grew up with, and we kind of all parent the way we were parented. Did you notice? Even if we had terrible parents, we teach the way we were taught. Have you ever seen that happen? Even if we didn't like the way we were taught, that's the model that's ingrained in us, and we tend to do it. But there are some options, and people can learn how to do it differently. The first blank to fill in on the top is, there's nothing as practical as a good theory, and that's what this is. It's a good theory.
Thank you.
Now, just to clarify, for some reason, I brought my worksheet in several colors, and this buff-colored one that the last people coming in are getting has only one side. The early folks got one with two sides. So that's a reward for coming early, but that just means you'll be writing more if you want to follow along and fill it up. And find a writing utensil if you can. Nothing as practical as a good theory. I start with the 4 steps of learning something new. Have you ever seen this?
No.
We all start U, I. You know what that stands for?
You.
Unconsciously incompetent. But when we want to learn something new and we take a class or we give it a try, we very quickly get to the 2nd step, which is consciously incompetent, CI. And if we decide this is for me, I want to do it, I want to do more of it, I want to do it better, we might get up to CC, consciously competent. And some people, the real pros, actually get to unconsciously competent. Let me give you an example. I have never in my whole life gone downhill skiing. I've gone cross-country skiing, but never downhill. So I'm at the 1st step, unconsciously incompetent. I don't know how to do it, and I don't even know how much I don't know. I haven't tried it. I don't know what there is to learn. I'm unconscious of my incompetence. But if you slap a pair of skis on my feet and push me over the edge, real quickly I get up to 2, consciously incompetent. I'm more and more aware that I don't know how to do this. What do you do next? How do you handle this? And I'm going to break my neck if I don't. Here's the... But if I decide that this is for me, and I want to take some courses in it, and study, and take some classes, I'm just going to put these over here. Anybody new? It's possible. Maybe. Maybe it's possible for me to get to the 3rd step and to be consciously competent. That means what I do is really think through, okay, here's this kind of snow, and here's what I got to do, and here's how I have to use my poles, and here's how I have to turn my ankles, and have to think it through. But you can be sure that someone that skis on an Olympic team is at the top. They're not thinking about, oh, what do I do now? They are in a flow. They're in an ability to just do it. And so those are 4 steps in whenever we're trying to learn something new. And if this feels awkward to you, hey, that's okay. That's just meaning you're on one of these steps. A lot of people reject it because it feels awkward to them. Well, gee, it's not going to feel comfortable or natural to everybody right away. And when we give it a try, we can get to the point where it's not only natural, but very comfortable.
And you can apply this to every major life change.
Right, absolutely. That's why I say there's four steps in accommodating ourselves or learning any new skill. Let's just go through a few quick definitions of what we're talking about when we're talking about communication. Effective communication involves two distinct roles. This is so elementary, and yet this is the reason why we have ineffective communication when we mix up the roles, because we must know which role we want to use. A listener is one who lets a speaker set the agenda and deal with their own stuff. If you're one to fill in the blanks, that's what it means. The listener lets the speaker deal with their stuff. That's the role of listener. The speaker is the one dealing with their own stuff. It's sort of like each of us carries an enormous Santa Claus bag on our back. It's invisible, but it's real. And the older you get, the fuller it is. It is a bag of your own experience, your own values, what you think about things. You carry that with you wherever you go. And whenever you're unpacking your bag and sharing your experience and talking about things that relate to you, that are on your agenda, you're the speaker. And whenever you're letting someone do that and you're receiving, you're the listener. So that's a little different than just saying the one that's flapping their jaws is the speaker and the one that's quiet is the listener. Sometimes to listen well, you have to do quite a bit of talking. But if you stay with the other person's stuff, you're listening, not speaking, okay? Once you switch and introduce your own stuff, then you stop being the listener and you've started being the speaker. And what happens is that it's like a ball rolling across the billiard table. You know, it can roll straight, but if it's just touched by another ball, it'll change the angle of the direction that it's going. And that's how it works with communication. And so that's why it's so important to keep these clear. Which do we want to be at any given moment? Do we want to be the speaker and bring our stuff there, introduce our own agenda, our own thoughts, our own experience, or do we want to be a listener and stay with the person that's speaking? And we'll get into a more practical application of that in just a minute. But that's the critical distinction. Number three, every important message is a sandwich. It is a layer of facts and a corresponding layer of feelings about those facts. Now, not every message is a sandwich. Not every message has a component of how the speaker feels about these facts. But important messages do. Number four, glop. I like these highly scientific terms. Glop are labels that mix observable phenomenon with projected interpretation of that phenomenon. An example of glop: that child is acting naughty. Well, what does naughty look like? When you can describe what you see and hear, and what someone else standing next to you would also see and hear, then you're not glopping. Glop means you mix together some observable phenomenon, something that anyone there could see or hear, the camera could pick it up, but also your interpretation of that. So that's pretty important to be able to keep that clear. We're here today to learn three skills, and I don't know how far we'll get. We'll do what we can do in an hour, or if you want to stay a little longer. But the three skills basically are how to talk so kids will listen to you, how to listen so kids will talk to you, and third, the no-lose method of problem solving. The material I'm presenting is not brand new, it's quite old, but that doesn't mean it's dated. It's, I think, excellent material. And I have seen this same sort of stuff presented in a number of different formats, and I'm still going with something called parent effectiveness training. You have seen that book that was around in the 70s. And really, very similar concepts have been marketed in different packaging. What we want to do is start with this behavior window you see right on your sheet. Yeah. Did everyone come again to pick up one of the sheets? I'll get one. I'll say again that those that came early got one of these worksheets that has two sides, but everybody else has only one. And I don't know why that happened, but it did. And that's no big loss, because that means if you're going to fill it all out, that you'll just be doing more writing. And I just helped people a little more by having some of the notes prepared. Behavior window is a concept of non-glopping. What do you see and hear? That's why we have the notion of a window. And when we could apply this communication theory to virtually any part of our life. I have taught this material for evangelism callers. It works great for that. But we're going to just name parenting as our topic today. When you're looking at the behavior of your particular child, it's like you're looking through a window. What do you see in here looking through the window? You're going to notice that there are some things that are acceptable. And there's going to be some that are not. And in the acceptable side will be things, we'll just kind of draw an artificial distinction here, where the child is doing things that looks like they are troubled. They are not happy. Things are going wrong, but it isn't messing up your life, so it's still acceptable. But then, I mean, that we would say that it looks like they own a problem. Things like this. I wonder if I'm going to get asked to the prom this year. Everybody's buying this new thing. Things that they're troubled, they're anxious, they have some issue, but it doesn't spill over into the area where they are messing up your life and making it hard for you to meet issues. But also in the acceptable part would be when we have no problems. That's where life is the best. Where our kids are doing their thing and they're meeting their needs and we're doing our thing and we're meeting our needs. And the big goal of this whole theory is to expand the no problem area, right? And this one can be reduced by what we're going to call active listening. But sometimes kids do things that cause me a problem. I own it. And then we're not going to be listening. Then we're going to be speaking. That's why this is how to listen so kids will talk to you. This is how to talk so kids will listen to you. And I always find that parents want to get right to this one. This is the tough area. Tell me how to talk to my kids so they'll listen to me. But you know, you can't know how to do this until you do this one well. This would be called an I message. And we're going to touch on the theory of both of those as we separate the two roles of being the listener or being the speaker. Now, I just drew this window like one of those windows, double hung. It looks like half of the behavior of the kids is going to be acceptable and half is not, but really, we know that's not it. Sometimes this middle line goes up or down. In other words, the acceptable behavior increases or decreases according to a couple things. It goes up and down according to the nature of the child we're dealing with. Some kids are just so much easier. Let's just say it. That's not a bad thing. Some kids are just hard to deal with. They just give you grief all the time. So it goes up and down. What's acceptable, the amount of acceptable stuff and not acceptable stuff goes up and down depending on the nature of the kid and the state of mind. Sometimes it goes up and down according to the parent's state of mind. Let's admit that too. There are days when you are Mother Earth and anything is fine, right? You just got a raise, you know, people tell you they love you and you say, oh, isn't that sweet? Those cute little kids are setting my curtains on fire. Isn't that wonderful? And so some days, you know, it's just like the kids can do anything and it's okay with us because we're in that state of mind that accepts that and likes that. But there are other days, instead of a window like this, where we have a large acceptance and a small, Some days we're uptight. Things aren't going well, and almost everything is wrong. You breathe wrong. You looked at me wrong. And so this amount of what's acceptable or not acceptable goes up and down depending on the nature of the kid and what state of mind they're in, and the nature of the parent, you, me, and what state of mind we're in, and what's been happening to us. It also goes up and down according to the circumstances. Where are we located? You know, certain things are acceptable here at worship that wouldn't be acceptable at worship at your home church, right? If you're in a very fancy restaurant, certain things aren't acceptable. And many parents, including us when our kids were small, just, you know, had a period of time where you never go to a fancy restaurant with your kids because it's just no fun, because you got to toe the line too much. And, you know, if your kids were like ours used to be, you know, anybody within 10 feet got spattered. You know, they needed to come with the cleaning crew afterwards. There's food all over the place. So the behavior window of what is acceptable behavior. Our kid is doing this and we're okay with it. Not acceptable behavior. Our kid is doing this and we're not okay with it. That changes. It changes by three different dynamics. But the window kind of helps us know where to start, what kind of communication we want to do. Like I said, here we want to use good listening. When it seems as if they've had a problem, they're mulling over something, they're puzzled, they're anxious, they're worried. And we can let them have that problem. It doesn't make a problem for us. But we love them, so we want to help them with it. And so that's what we're going to work on, is active listening. And then we're going to touch on this. When their behavior makes us have a problem. And what's the definition of problem except needs get frustrated? When I can't get my needs met, that's frustrating. And so we're going to talk about that. Here's the theory of active listening. And again, some of you have this on the back side and some of you don't. So every communication is given in a code. We have a speaker, that's our kid. We have a listener. Now, if they are really exceptional and they just tell us what their issue is, it's direct, that's simple. But most of the time it isn't that way. The speaker doesn't tell us the whole thing. The speaker sends it through a coder. And they say some things and they do some things with their body that is a message, but we're not sure what the message is. And so to be a really good listener, we have to have a decoder of some kind. We have to learn to own and operate a decoder. The message that comes from the speaker is going to be lots of things. It's going to be words, verbal. It's going to be body language and an intonation of voice, lots of nonverbal. And it can be all kinds of things that if we're going to really hear it, we have to somehow pick up all the incoming data as best as we can and think, well, what does that person mean about this? Like I said already in the definitions, every message that's really important is a sandwich. It's fact, but it's also feelings about the fact. And here it comes, just stuck together. Now, again, the speaker probably isn't going to tell your feelings always. And so if you were going to hear the whole message, you want the whole package. And so I'm going to just give you some examples of how we do this. If, for instance, our child says, I don't want to go to church tomorrow. It's boring. Okay? Now, I know none of you have ever had that happen, but just play with me here. So they say that, and you say, okay, now I know the facts. And I know something of the feeling. It was boring. If you decide to say, Well, I don't care what you think, you're going to go to church. Are you listening? No. You are dealing with your stuff, right? That's the message. If you decide, I don't like that tone of voice, young lady, you are not dealing with their stuff, you're dealing with your stuff. And just for the sake of learning the skill, let's say, well, I'm going to really try not to introduce my stuff. I'm going to stay with their stuff as long as I can. So what you do is try to understand what this is. And there are five things you can do that are all good listening skills. And the first one is silence. Your daughter says, I don't want to go to church tomorrow, it's boring. And you're silent. Now when I say silence, I mean silence where you're still connected. You have eye contact. You're not watching TV out of the sight. No, that's not silence. That's distraction. So they say, I'm not going to go to church. Silence is a powerful invitation to say more. And you won't be introducing your own stuff if you're silent. Okay? Another way to be a good listener. You can't do that all the time. Guess what? It doesn't work 100% of the time. You've got to have a couple other options. So try this one. You got to be a good grunter to be a good listener. You know, several times in my life, I have paid to go to a counselor for some reason to try to think through my issues. And I decided, you pay a lot of money for someone to grunt at you. And it feels so good. You know, you just say, oh, this happened and this happened. And they say, oh, that's $100 of therapy right there. Grunting doesn't introduce your own stuff. I'm talking about nonverbal response, some kind of a acknowledgement that you received what words were thrown in your direction, but you're still not introducing your stuff. And a third option is a door opener. So your kid says, I don't want to go to church tomorrow, it's boring. And you say something that indicates you're willing and wanting to talk about that. Door openers can be nonverbal. You can just say, excuse me for picking you. You can just say, you're sitting down, you're stopping what you're doing, you're indicating, I want to talk about this. Or you may say that. You may open the door by saying, well, sounds like we've got to talk about this because I want you to go to church. Now that's both a listening, sounds like we should talk about it. I want you to go to church. For a minute I switched back into being a speaker. That's my stuff, see? So you got those three openers. And a fourth one is to mirror. And the kid says, I don't want to go to church tomorrow, it's boring. And you say, it's boring. Bounce back the words. And that helps us understand the fifth one, which is the skill we're trying to learn, which is active listening. Because in active listening, you're not bouncing back the words, you're bouncing back the whole message. You're trying to hear not just the feeling, but the fact and the feeling stuck together, and you're giving that a try. And you're saying, did I get that right? That's what active listening is. And we use all five of these skills in our repertoire of being a listener. Sometimes we're silent, sometimes we grunt, we open the door, sometimes we have to open it more than once, sometimes it gets slammed shut and we open it again. Sometimes we bounce back the field, the words or the facts, but active listening is bouncing back our perception of the whole message. I'm going to just illustrate this in a way by moving off of that one. I don't want to go to church tomorrow. And going into an adult realm, okay? Let's say a very, very good adult friend of yours says, oh, I can't play golf next Tuesday. I have to go see the doctor. Fact. What might be some feelings of that?
Anxiety.
Yeah?
Fear.
Fear.
Disappointment of not being able to golf.
Maybe. So as a listener, you hear that, you hear more than the facts. This is more because you care about this person. This is a good friend of yours. So you're not just going to say, okay, we'll change the schedule and forget it. Your good friend has just said, I'm going to the doctor. And so you kind of think of some way that you can hear that. Going to the doctor, and you, that would be number four. Going to the doctor. Or, what? Sort of a grunt or door opener. What do you mean you're going to the doctor? That's a door opener. In other words, what you are doing is decoding what little you've got to work on so far. And saying, is this it? Did I hear? You're telling me something. Did I get it? And you're bouncing back what you perceive to be the fact and the feeling. Now here is, this is my favorite part of this lecture. This is grace. Because when you make the attempt to listen, not bring in your own stuff, you never lose. You can't do it wrong. You do it wrong when you stop being the listener and start being the speaker. Your friend says, I'm going to the doctor, and you say, oh, I hate doctors. Okay, that's your stuff. You're the speaker then, right? You're bringing in, oh yeah, well, which doctor? Oh yeah, which hospital? Yeah, oh, my mother had to go. Well, that's all your agenda. But if you stay with their stuff, you always win. Now, let me give you an example. Go ahead.
Well, with an adult, that's really easy. It seems to me the dilemma is when you're a parent and you have this kid where complete separation has not occurred, and where the line is between what's your stuff and what's their stuff is not quite as clear.
Like, do you have an example of that?
Like, if your child, you know, you have a 10-year-old, they know that if they're sick or they're maybe getting sick, they should probably wear a sweatshirt at night. But, you know, that's really their stuff. But as the parent, there's still this kind of gray zone of like, well, if she was five, you'd say, wear the sweatshirt, you're wearing your sweatshirt. But at 10, it's like, where does their stuff begin and your stuff end? And there's obviously much more complex ones like that.
But that's a good example. And that's an example of how hard parenting is, because you start with someone totally dependent.
Right.
And if you do it well, you end up with somebody totally independent,
right,
that doesn't need you.
Right.
And the in-between is the hard part, because you don't know when to relinquish. And it's always a mixed bag, even when your kids are 29. They still have
some part of it that's your stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you can get by the whether or not they should wear a sweater part, but you get into things that are more difficult. And so, yes, you're right, it's more difficult with kids, because your adult friend will probably be better at being a speaker and be clearer and need less decoding. But if you're willing, I'm going to stay with this just to kind of get this model, and we'll deal with lots of kid scenarios as well. My point that I'm making is, when we try to be the listener, even if we get it wrong, people sense the grace of someone hearing us, and will help us get it right. For instance, I'm going to the doctor on Thursday. Oh my gosh, that's pretty scary. That's my estimation. I'm the listener. That's my estimation. Now, if I hit it right on the head, I get a confirmation. Yeah, I don't know what to think. And then I can listen again and listen again, and we can pursue that. If I get it wrong, I get a correction. They say, I'm going to the doctor on Thursday. I say, oh, that must be pretty scary. Oh, no, it's just routine. Can't lose. Even when you get the feeling dead wrong, if you're staying with their feeling and not your own stuff, you will either get it confirmed or expanded or explained or changed. And the only time you lose is when you forget to be a listener and you bring in your own stuff there. And so that's how that works, that the speaker will say something and you try to understand it. You, as best you can, you bounce back what you think the message is, and then you wait for the next message, which will either confirm or expand it or change it. To me, this is so grace-filled. It's sort of like You know what Carl Orff musical instruments are? Anybody know what they are?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there are xylophones and percussion things and noisemakers that you use with little children especially. And the tonal instruments are such that all the keys are removable. So if you're going to do a song in the key of G, ahead of time, you as the leader take out all the notes that aren't going to harmonize with the key of G. And then you pass out all these instruments and you play and the kids pound away and every note they hit sounds wonderful. Don't you wish life were like that? You could pull out the sour notes, you know? But this is pretty close, because when you really try to listen, stay with their stuff, try to imagine what their feeling is. How do they feel about that fact? And then you bounce it back, you will then immediately get either a confirmation, yep, that's what I'm feeling. And then you take the next step, take the next step, or you'll get a correction. So the listening process is, you know, when we diagram it and when we talk about it, we take it so slow. But in reality, it's like a ping pong game. Boom, 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 boom. And listening means staying with this person's stuff. Just for fun, let's do a little exercise here. I'm going to throw out something that might be what the speaker says, and you tell me what you think is possibly the feeling. If I'm the speaker and we're together and I say, oh, things are so different at church now. That's a good response. That's a good number two right there. But what might be the feeling? Things are so different at church now.
How are they different?
That's the question. But what might be the feeling of a speaker who says, you know, things are so different?
Disappointment.
I don't like it as well.
Nostalgia.
I'm sorry?
Nostalgia.
Okay.
Yeah, you can say sense of loss.
Okay.
Don't fit anymore.
Or it could be the opposite. Things are so different. Boy, things are happening. It's a vital place now. I like it. We don't know which. So someone says things are so different. We kind of try to figure it out. We bounce it back. Yeah, it sounds like you don't like it as much. And if that's what, if you heard it right, they'll say, you know, I don't. Or they'll, if you heard it wrong, they'll correct you. See how that works?
If you look at their body language and their tone of voice, that'll help you discern.
Absolutely.
I mean, you might be wrong still, but I mean, it gives you a clue.
And the better you know the person, the better you are at discerning. If it's a total stranger, it's hard to know how to read the body language. But your own child, you're probably the best at. I would say you're probably the best at it with your own spouse, but personal experience has taught me that maybe that's not always true. So we pick up words, feelings, tonation, and decode it and bounce it back and see if that's what they're thinking. Let's try another one. Church doesn't mean much to me anymore. What might be the feeling?
No one's hearing you in the church.
I'm being ignored, maybe.
Abandoned.
I'm being abandoned. I'm sad, a sense of loss. And if that's the feeling that you're picking up, your decoders, now the person didn't say it, a really good speaker who wants to can make that clear and tell what the feeling is. But usually that doesn't happen. So you got to decode and you pick up what that feeling is and then you bounce it back and see if that's what it is. Let's go with a more extended scenario. Okay? And just to kind of practice, and again, if we do more time on this skill, that just helps us in the other two skills as well, because we have to listen. That's the foundation, the cornerstone of any kind of good communication. Here's the scenario. You and I are people who don't know each other, and we just climbed into a plane going from Minneapolis to Los Angeles. And we're total strangers. And I'm the other passenger, and I'm doing things that you could ignore. You have every right to. But you decide, hey, maybe this is a chance to practice active listening. Because if I do it really badly, I'm never going to see this guy again. And So here I've got a couple hours, you know, between the meal and whatever. And so you're going to try it. So I'm the speaker sitting next to you in the airplane. We've got a couple hours where we're captured together. And you're deciding to try to be a listener. And my first message isn't words, but it's, you know, these damn planes, I'm never on time. We were supposed to be leaving about 20 minutes ago.
Are you in a hurry?
Frustration. We're total strangers, so you're starting at square one. You have no idea what this is, right? But if you decide to be the speaker, you could say, yeah, Northwest is always late, blah, 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 you know, and that's your stuff. Then you won't be listening. But let's say you're going to practice this. And so you say something like, you're anxious to get home. Or, you know, there'd be 100 ways to do it right. There isn't just one way. I'm just pulling one out of the air here. So I'm just giving you this nonverbal and a few grumps about 20 minutes late, and you respond by saying, you're anxious to get home, and I say, I'm a speaker, and I say, well, yeah, I am, but I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know what's going to wait for me at home. What might be the feeling? You don't know, but I mean, again, give me a try. Give me one of these five. Don't all do number one.
Sounds like things are kind of tough at home.
That's a good one. That's very key to feelings, but it's so ambiguous yet, right? Yeah, my wife will be there to meet me at the airport, and I got to tell her some bad news. Good grunting here. Right.
Got some bad news, huh?
That's good number four.
What would you want to say, like, what? You're never saying what.
Okay. You know, questions are questionable, and they are never necessary. I'll tell you what, some people can use questions as a listener very well, but most of us don't. Most of the time, if we use too many questions, it feels like we're taking charge of the conversation and we're the speaker. So questions are questionable. That's why I'd say, just know that. For instance, if Maury tells me, he's got a doctor's appointment. I say, Maury, which doctor? Which hospital? What, do you have a specialist? You're going to have surgery? And I have 1,000 questions, and it's like an interview. And all of a sudden, I've taken this conversation, and I need my needs met here. And so I say, just be careful with the questions. I know people that can do it really gently, but generally, questions grab the speaker's wand. Because, and the reason they're never needed is that you can phrase anything as a question or as a statement just by flipping it around. And secondly, they're never needed because if you are tracking with the speaker, you're really listening, at some point, if there's a critical piece of information that they know you have to understand something in order to get the whole picture, they'll realize it and they'll tell you. They'll answer those questions in their time, not yours. So that's why I say, just be gentle with questions. Just don't go into a newspaper reporter mode and just demand all the answers that would help you deal with it right now. Just kind of hang in there with them. Let's advance this several stages here just to keep it more interesting. The hardest part is to start. We got to the point where the speaker, the guy next to you in the plane, is, you know, all frustrated and angry. He says his wife is going to meet him. He doesn't know what he's going to tell her. He's pretty upset. And then he says something like, she is thinking that I'm coming home with good news about a promotion. I thought I was getting a promotion. Now nobody dare say.
How about that's sad?
You're disappointed,
yeah,
that's sad.
You're worried about her reaction.
You're worrying about how she might react. There's 100 ways to do it right. You're always doing it right if you're staying with their stuff. And we'll pick out one of those and say, you know, I told her I'd get this promotion, and that would mean quite a bit for us. You know, it's a big raise in my salary and more responsibility, and I just was sure I had it in the bag. But then there's Johnson, this damn kid. Jeez, life isn't fair. Everybody's trying number one. Now, you're real good at silence. Give one of these a try.
Uh-huh.
Ah, there we go.
So somebody young has taken what you were really hoping for.
Yeah, you know, that's how this company always operates. They just work you to death, and then they, when you're close to retirement, they throw you away.
Feel pretty rejected.
Again, stepping out of the role play. You see what we're intent, what we're trying to do. We're trying to stay with the stuff of the speaker. We got a repertoire of options that do it. There's probably many more, but at least these will work. And because we have to say things once in a while, not just do one and two, when we say our response, we're going to try to stay with the message. Let's have a whole new, let's put it into the realm of kids and parenting. Whole new one. I am your 9-year-old daughter, and I come home and say, Mom, or Dad, sign this. Just sign it. And you say, well, what is it?
Yeah,
right?
What is it?
I
usually
have
to sign.
Do you? Oh, good. Well, I know. That's what I want. I just want.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just sign.
Yeah. What is it? All right.
Well, I mean, just sign it because then I don't have to go to Phi Ed.
You don't have to go to Phi Ed.
No, I don't want to go to Phi Ed. Just sign it, then I get out of it. Physical education.
Oh, okay. So you're not feeling like
a Christian? That's a good question.
So
you're not feeling like going to Phi Ed is not a question. It's a statement.
Oh, okay. So you're not feeling like going to Phi Ed.
I don't want to go, and none of the girls want to go. We hate it.
None of the girls want to go.
No. It's just terrible. Just to sign it, and I'll take it in, and that's all you have to do. Don't worry about it, Mom.
Well, I'm not worried about it. You obviously seem worried about it.
Well, I'm not going to go. Whether you sign it or not, I'm not going to go.
I'd like to talk about the course I know what you say.
Yeah. Here's number three. Say what you said.
I'd like to talk about this some more.
That's a door opener. What's another possible?
I guess you find it pretty disagreeable.
That's a good one. You must find this very disagreeable. That's your the feeling and the fact. This Phi Ed class, which is disagreeable. Good reflection.
What's going on that makes you want to avoid it?
Yeah, that's a question. And that's exactly what every parent here wants to know.
Yes.
Right? We're all thinking that question, and maybe you can get by with asking it, but maybe you can't. Maybe you should try not to put it in a question.
Something's going on that you really don't like.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't stand that Mr. Carlson. Oh, he gives me the creeps. Someone says, me too. What is that response? That's being the speaker. I hate him too. He gives me the creeps too. That's my stuff. But if you're going to stay with your daughter, and I say, oh, I just can't stand that Mr. Carlson. He gives me the creeps. Doesn't that raise a few antennae? Don't you want to know some more here?
I'll talk to the principal for you.
Thank you, but sign this first. Okay, why would you talk to the principal except that you are assuming something,
yeah,
and maybe you can learn more,
yeah,
by staying
but
in the conversation?
Actually, I've gotten into my stuff.
Huh?
I've gotten into my stuff when I see
you
that
have.
Boy.
I'll take this in my hands here.
I'm going to protect my
daughter. Can you just say the creeps?
Oh, yeah, Mom. And all the girls say the same thing. It just gives us the creeps. The way he looks at us.
He must be really creepy, huh?
Oh, he's so creepy. And, you know, he looks at us and it's like we're not wearing any clothes when he looks at us. That's how it feels.
Wow.
That's
That really does sound scary.
Oh, it's just awful. And we all feel the same way. I've talked to Susie and I've talked to Joan, and we just all feel like he's undressing us with his eyes. So just sign this now.
Oh, I'd be signing. How does it bring your friends
involved? Well, I might say something like, I was trying to figure out how I could figure out what her parents were doing.
That's probably a good step, but that's probably too early.
Is that okay?
I think you want to know, is there really some legitimate concern about some potential abuse by this teacher? You want to get into it deep enough with your own child and really hear their story. And at some point, probably you want to be the speaker for your child and assure them that you are not sending them into a dangerous situation, that you are going to stand. You may want to get to that point. But on the other hand, you know your kid. You've been down this road before. There's been other false alarms. So you're going to be a little, you know, your propensity is to believe them, but you haven't really explored the whole thing yet.
Well, you could. Would you be off guard if you told them your own feelings and said, "Well, that really sounds pretty worrisome to me." But, and I'm kind of interested in signing this for you. But,
that's right.
But can you, it's a question.
Elaborate.
But it sounds like there's some really bad stuff going on.
Yeah. You can be a speaker anytime you want, and that would be a beautiful message. I don't like what I'm hearing. It really worries me. Tell me some more. See, for a minute you were the speaker, and you say, but then tell me some more. You know, has anybody talked to the principal about him, or has there been any actual things happening that were bad? Or, you know, you can ask. It depends. The questions, you'll know it if you should ask questions or not. You'll know it with your own child.
Before the question, what about just saying, I really need to know more about
it? Yeah, right, because questions are never required or necessary. Questions are questionable, and so you can always say, I need to know more. That's still being speaker, that's your agenda. But what you are doing in active listening always is getting a message that's always coded, and then you're trying to really hear the facts and the feelings about those facts. And the daughter is just wanting to deal with this to start with. Sign it. I don't want to be in physical education. Sign it. But as you listen, feelings might come up. Here's something you'll learn. Feelings are transitory. If we had the time, I could push that role play of sitting next to a guy in the airport through 7 or 8 or 9 different feelings. And being a good listener is the thing that makes us so that we're not stuck on one particular feeling. If I feel intensely about something and someone receives that, then I can move on. That's often the essence of counseling. So as the feelings are expressed and as they're received, then we move on. We have some progress. And the way we do that is just to make an attempt, make a guess, try to understand what they might be saying. Responses to that, and then we're going to go on to the next.
Men don't grunt much.
They don't?
No. In my experience, that's the way women talk for each other, with those sound effects and encouragements and all. And men are more silent listeners, so I guess my question is, how much can we enter over into territory that's not really comfortable for us?
Yeah.
Try a different style without being artificial.
I wonder, do we all agree with that, that men don't grunt very much? They don't do
anything
to
her? She's not going to notice it right away. Huh. They want to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a different issue. I think men grunt and don't talk. I think women are more likely to talk and not.
Oh, my. Dan, you don't grunt. You might think, in communication books, this is one, there are sex differences here, and that's one thing that most of the experts say, you know, that it is a more feminine way of communicating than it is masculine.
actually say things like, wow, or oh, or oofta.
That's a good grunt.
Well, if it's true that men don't grunt so much, maybe all men have to work on this and do that better. And if it's true that we rush ahead to fixing stuff, which I could never be accused of doing, we need to slow that down and stay with this business. We're almost out of time, but I did want to touch on the second skill. If you see how this works, we're staying with the message, staying with their stuff, until we get to the point where we shift gears and say, okay, now I think I know what you want. Now I think I know how you feel. Now I'm going to tell you where I'm at and what I feel about this. And we do that consciously. When we do it without realizing it, then we're going to block the listening process. But when we do it as a decision, okay, I think I've gotten to where I understand. It's also the case that, especially depending on the child, we hardly ever tie up some issue in a nice closure, a nice, neat package. And in fact, it's more some progress on it today and some progress tomorrow. They go to their grandfather's funeral, and you as mom or dad are real concerned. How are they handling this? And so you're all ready to deal with them on this. What did you think of you? And you get nothing. And it's 2 weeks later when you're washing dishes, and a little voice says, do all people that die go to heaven? Mm-hmm. And then they're dealing with it on their schedule, on their time. And do all people that die go to heaven? If you're going to be the speaker, you say, well, it's like this. You know, I'll show you in Genesis, and I'll show you on. Or you can be the listener and say, something like, that's a concern, isn't it? Because even if you just say something so neutral that it introduces no new element, they're apt to be willing to take another step, and maybe that's when they're going to deal with it. But they won't deal with it fully then either. It'll be another 2 weeks when they'll do the second step, according to when they're ready. And if you are loving them and with them all the time, you can wait. Remember the behavior window. This skill is when they do behavior that's acceptable, no problem, or where they own the problem. And I'm saying that the girl who says, sign this, I don't want to go to physical education, has some concern, and you're listening it through. It's good active listening. Now, this, of course, can be overdone. It's not always appropriate. If you're in the no problem area, you don't have to listen. Your child says, Mom, what time is it? And you say, you have a lot of anxiety about what time it is. No, that's inappropriate. That's the no problem area. They're just saying, what time is it? But when you're in this area where I own the problem, then what you want to do is be the clearest speaker you can be. So that you don't count on the fact that your kid is a good decoder or motivated to do it. So you want to give them the whole message, fact and feeling, right together. You want to be as clear as you can, and it involves three things. I feel when, because. Now, those that have a back sheet have couple other options, but I mean that's basically what you need to deliver. That's an I message. Your daughter has a 10 o'clock curfew. Last night, 10 o'clock came and went, and she didn't come home. And so did 10:15 and 10:30 and 10:45 and 11:15, she staggers in. You're already in bed. You hear her come. Now it's the next morning. You're going to deal with it. That's a problem. You see why that's a problem? You own that problem. That frustrates your meeting your needs. You have some needs for what this kid should be doing and so forth. And so you're going to do it with a good I message. I message as opposed to you message, not you're so inconsiderate. You really hurt my feelings. You made me so nervous. You gave me anxiety. All those are you messages, very, very blaming. But an I message would be, I feel so afraid when you can't come home at 11:15 because I think that maybe you were hurt.
Or drunk since she staggered.
And that's the essence of when your kids are doing behavior that's not acceptable to you, give them this. And then guess what? Everybody go like this. Come on. Shift gears. Because once you deliver the I message, you're going to get something like, well, I'm old enough to come home. You know, they're going to give some kind of retort, and then you listen. Well, Mom, you're just too controlling. So you think that I should give you more freedom. Or you listen to that all the way, as far as you can listen to it. But you're not giving up your ground here. As soon as you've listened all the way, you give the same message again. But I have needs here, and these are my needs. And so you stand your ground, you let them know, you make it easy for them to decode. But every single response that they give that seems to convey some hidden agenda, you listen, you shift gears and listen, and then understand. We don't have any more time, but...
Well, I'm remembering hearing that anger is usually a secondary feeling that covers up all the things we really do feel, the anxiety we feel about it, and that if we can set the anger aside and go to the deeper feelings, we don't come across as defensive. I mean, you say, I feel angry when you came home is not necessarily the primary feeling. It's more anxiety. They're on the street somewhere, they're in a bad crowd or whatever. The reason is, and yeah. I have many times blown these conversations just because I was so angry. And when I look deeper.
And men specialize in anger. It's a syndrome. There's many, many men that overdo it. And anger is usually a secondary feeling. The primary feeling is either hurt or fear. So if you can put the hurt or fear here instead of the anger, because anger is going to push somebody away. If you're driving on the street and someone pulls in front of you and almost causes an accident, you get angry. But that's not the first thing you get. You get fear. You get afraid for just a moment. But especially men, we hate the world to know that we have fears. And so we flip it into anger all the time. Or it could be hurt. Vicki and I make an appointment. We're going to meet at some place for lunch, and she doesn't show up. And when she does, I get angry, and I say something not nice. But that's not my first feeling. The whole time I was waiting, I was thinking, doesn't she care about my feelings? I mean, we had agreed to this, and she's, you know, and I don't even know the reason she's delayed. So usually anger is a secondary feeling that we give ourselves, because especially for men, we feel safer being angry. But if we can put into our I message not so much anger, but hurt or fear or whatever, and the because is critical. If we don't have a legitimate because, it's not going to work. If, for instance, my son has long hair, and I don't like long hair on boys. I think it's wrong or whatever. And I say, I feel so disgusted when your hair goes down to your shoulders because I don't have, you know, that does not affect my life. I have no reason. I may have a preference there. But really, that doesn't affect my life. If my kid comes home with muddy feet, and I say, oh, I feel so exasperated when you walk across the kitchen floor with muddy feet because I just scrubbed the floor and now I got to do it again. I got a lot of work. Boy, do they understand that. They understand that. That makes sense to them. But if I say, I don't like your long hair, they say, well, live with it.
So because they flip you off when you tell them what about, you know, that you have all this extra work and it's like, so what? And where do you go with it?
Well, then I'd say, is that what you think, that I'm just a machine to take care of you? What? That really exasperates me even more. When you talk about my concerns as if they don't matter at all, because they matter to me, and I'm trying to make us a family here, and, you know, I do it again.
where's the line then in not pushing that guilt button too much? Because us Lutherans are real good at that.
Yeah.
The what button?
The guilt
button. Because yeah. I catch myself saying that to my kids sometimes. Oh gosh, I'm doing just like my mom.
Well, my answer to that is sometimes my kids are guilty and sometimes I'm guilty. And so it is not the case that we have to totally avoid any inference of guilt. I mean, sometimes that's legitimate apprehension of reality. Now, we don't want to be overdoing it and too heavy on it, but if somebody promises and then doesn't follow through, there is guilt there.
Are you asking about the difference between guilt and shame?
I suppose I'm just asking about that line of where I would see a danger in that. I'm just using the floor example of, you know, you walked on every dirty feet, therefore I'm going to have to clean it again. I've got too much work to do. I'm stressing out here. I don't know whether I'm going to cope with my whole week. I'm just feeling really run down. And, and you burst into tears. You're going, and they've just forgotten to wipe their feet, sort of thing. So I'm thinking there's got to be a line there somewhere of the because.
See, I think that's all clear, because if you've produced enough guilt, the child will say, okay, I'll clean it up. And then you're off the hook.
So you just keep going until they say, if it's something they did
and they know it's out of line, I mean, most kids know they shouldn't get mud on the floor, then I think you don't have to worry. But if you're telling the kid, if what you're saying, I'm upset, is because you're such a sloppy bum that you are always getting this floor dirty and you're always making me work harder than I can handle, that's shaming.
That's shaming. Mm.
No, I wasn't actually.
No, you're
not.
Shame means you're a bad person for what you did. Guilt means you did something wrong. Guilt is much more realistic and much more, we can handle it, because sometimes we do something wrong.
You know, sometimes we as parents don't forget to educate our children. Because you say that all kids, most kids, know they should get mud on the floor. Sometimes something slips up, and for whatever reason, you know, maybe mom's been mopping it up for a while, and so they don't see it. So I think you can go into the, hey, facts of life, you know? Mud on the floor means somebody cleans it. So, hey, from this day forward, anybody gets mud on the floor, they clean the floor. You don't have to discuss it.
Yeah, there are some issues you just don't.
I mean, why get into it? That's, to me, that's something you need to have access to.
Yes.
Please.
My dad used to say when I wouldn't do the dishes voluntarily without being asked, he'd go out in the kitchen and he would say how to do it by slam banging everything around and washing them himself. And so when I was raising mine, I said, go do the dishes. And later, when I was talking to my dad about that, I said, it would have been easier on me if you hadn't put that guilt trip on me, you know. And he just laughed. He said, yeah, he said, but you start doing the dishes pretty good. And then he said, you know, you used to go from being a stinking kid to a real sweet girl as soon as you got the work done. And so I remembered that and tried to tell my kids, you know, get to work. You stink. You're a stinking kid. Get to work. And as soon as they would get the work done, they were as nice as could be. So there's some action. Yeah. Well,
but did they carry?
Oh, they carry. They felt good about themselves because they corrected the problem. And so there's some action that can go along with this communication thing that really does make the kids feel better. And then you can say to them, I like what you did. That's wonderful. And my daughter's taught me that, to do that with my grandkids.
Well, this is a good learning thing for our children, not just to build relationships in our families, but for them to grow up and go out into the world, because they come into the world, you know, just everybody takes care of them because they're just these little helpless things that have these needs, and we do everything for them. And then as they grow up, we kind of have to teach them to pay attention. Oh, you're a person and you have feelings. And so if they learn that at home, every time they go across the floor, when you just, and you say, I really feel like, you know, exasperated and like I'm the servant in the house rather than a partner in the family, then they start to learn about how
how their actions affect other people. And that's part of our job, is to teach them that they do affect other people's feelings.
And we're going to be way ahead if we teach that by how we live, as well as what we say. And I bet there's enough mothers in the world that do this, that you've all had a chance to be in the grocery store where some mother is banging her kid. This'll teach him not to hit your brother.
Oh,
have you ever seen that?
Oh.
That doesn't teach them. That actually teaches them to hit. When you're frustrated, you solve your problem by hitting. Actions speak louder than words. So you and I as parents need to model what we want from our kids. How do you take an aspirin? When your kid is there, you read. Let's see. It says here, 2 tablets every 4 hours. Okay. Say that. Teach them how to take medications. Isn't that smart? Just show them. Model this. Someone has really offended you, and your kid is a totally outside of the circle of this thing, but you say this. You don't say, I hate that person, or that's really a bum, but you say, I feel so diminished when the pastor talks about women who don't have a job, because I feel like my work is so important here. And your kid isn't even part of that conflict, but you are showing them that your feelings count. You're caring for yourself enough to say that, you know. And if we model and live these I messages, that is another way to teach it. And always, always catch your kids doing good. Catch them doing good 5 times for every time you catch them doing bad. You know, just say, gee, isn't it fun when everybody's doing their thing and we're not having a lot of carping and we're just kind of mellowing out here as a family. Isn't that fun? Just catch people doing something good or creative and name it. Mm-hmm. I think we need to quit. We've had a real...